Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
I'm your host, Stan Mason. Once again, on this show, this is not my show. This is our show. This is where we all get down to talking about the real issues. We cover a gambit of issues here, and sometimes we'll tune in on some of the isolated incidents. But this is the show where, even though I try to script out the programs on relevant topics, you know, if the audience has something that's on the burner, you know, we're going to get that in. We're going to squeeze that in. Because on here, when we get to the solution, nobody is safe in here. You know, black people, white people, gay, straight, Christian, atheist, Muslim, Republican, Democrat, in here, we don't care. There's no allegiance. There's just the topic. In this show, unlike a lot of other shows, you're not going to find people with a lot of credentials that are going to be guests. If I'm doing a show on gangs, I'm going to have gang members talk. If I'm doing a show on drug dealers, I'm going to have ex-drug dealers talk about it. If we're doing a show on prostitution, we're going to get people who did prostitution. Because to me, you can be so educated on the subject that you know nothing about it. So in here, this is a place where the voice of the least can be heard. You know, and people say, well, how does that transcribe over into policing? That street officer, He is the same thing. He's the voice of experience, but he's the voice that never had the opportunity to put any input into these decisions, these policies that you guys see that departments and cities enact. So what I wanted to do today is talk about, how do we build a better police department? How do you get the police department that you want, not the police department that the mayor wants, not the police department that the city council wants, and not even the police department that the chief wants? The chief is a high-paid civil servant. That's right. He serves you. He's here to work for you. So you need to let the chief know what you want in a department. Now, that means you got to become involved in the department. You're going to have to learn about your department. You're going to have to strip away the myths from the realities. And that's the same thing. Now, I'm talking to officers too at the same time, and to police administrators at the same time. Now, you can't just come in here and say, well, we know what this community needs. If you haven't talked to that community, you don't know what that community needs. Now, I'm not talking about talking to the key preacher with the biggest church. I'm not talking about talking to the guy who owns four or five blocks but doesn't even live in the neighborhood. I'm talking about talking to Miss Jones or Mr. Smith. I'm talking about the people who live in the wood frame houses that are making their ends meet, the people that are out there doing the hard labor, out there in the street just trying to survive. We got to get these people involved in the solution and identifying what the problems are. So some of the things that I kind of made note of that I wanted to talk about is, number one, good morning, Tony. Got my Facebook Live crew on here. So if you guys hear me calling out names, I got to recognize them, because these are people that have been with me, I mean, from day one, from just doing Facebook Live sessions. And we were all just venting to structuring this thing, and it's growing, and it's constantly a work in progress. And like I said, this is not my thing. This is our thing. So good morning, Felipe. So, I mean, everybody, I appreciate everybody that gets in. But let's get to the first line is the city. You know, what kind of identity does the city have? We've all been to these cities where we go in and we'll come out and we'll go, man, I didn't like that city. And somebody else will say, man, I loved it there. So we have to say for the city, okay, what is your identity, city? Before we even get to the police department, what is your identity? What are your neighborhoods like? Do you have more rundown neighborhoods than good neighborhoods? Are the good neighborhoods manicured and all the city streets are manicured, but the low-income neighborhoods, people are walking through potholes, no bus service, you know, power lines sagging, schools boarded up, So these are the kind of things that the city is putting forth in identity. The city is saying to the visitor that we're going to take care of this nice area, but we're going to get to these people over here when we get to them. What kind of resources is the city allocating to its neighborhoods? Obviously, your nice neighborhoods, your stable neighborhoods aren't going to need as many resources as your lower-income neighborhoods. But when those lower-income neighborhoods need them, are those resources available? Or is it a year wait? Is it an 18-month wait? What kind of schools are in these neighborhoods? Does the neighborhood have a school that's boarded up, that's got weeds growing out of the roof of it? And we had such a school here years ago when I started. It was called Brook Avenue. People were just driving stolen cars right up inside the school. And you could tell a lot. Hey, good morning, Ty. You could tell a lot about that neighborhood by how decayed the school was. The school was basically allowed to just sit and fall apart on its own. You know, what kind of churches are in there? If the church buildings are in the neighborhood and they're abandoned, they're in disrepair, they're falling apart, what kind of message does that send? Now, cities, and the reason I'm saying this is city officials now. You'll be quick to go over to somebody's house and throw a ticket on them because the grass is over 9 inches, or you'll be quick to throw a tag on them and fine them because they need a new roof put on. But some of these city buildings and school district buildings and businesses are falling apart right before your eyes, and we ignore that kind of stuff. So what kind of message, city, are you sending when you allow these things to happen in certain parts of town? Then we move forward and we say, okay, what about parks and recreation? City, do you have resources available? If you have parks, are the parks maintained? Is the grass cut? Is the trash emptied? Are the trees trimmed? Is the playground equipment in good repair? These are all things that have a big impact. You know, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s. And growing up, we spent a lot of our formidable years on the playground and the park. That was our thing. That's what kept us out of some of the bad things that go on. But we've kind of moved away from that. And you see some of these playgrounds, they got equipment from the 60s sitting there still rusting through that sits in a lot of these neighborhoods. Just simply putting a basketball goal up in a low-income part of town is not a park. Okay, that's not the definition of a park. Do you have water fountains there? Do you have bathrooms there? You know, you say, well, you know, people don't use the park. Well, they probably don't use it because they're bringing kids there and you have no bathroom facilities. So who wants to drive all the way to a park that you end up, you have to walk home or drive home just to go to the bathroom? So we need to make sure the cities are investing all their time and effort into this. And at the end, we're going to go back and we're going to tie all these together in how we do it. Now let's move to the police. Okay, when we talk about making the police department that you want, you have to first ask yourself, what is it that you want out of that police department? Then you have to say, you know, do you really know the makeup of your police department? How many males do you have? How many females do you have? How many blacks do you have? How many Asians do you have? How many Hispanics do you have? How many officers are assigned to patrol? How many officers are in these special units that are spread out? How many detectives are they? Who's the officer that works your area? Who's the sergeant over your area in the daytime or the evening or the nighttime? See, you got to do some homework, too. You can't just go in and dictate because that's just hollow words. Do some homework. Find out these things. Most police departments should print out for you guys an annual report that says how much money they took in on forfeitures, what are all the patrol shifts, what are all the officers' names, you know, what accomplishments the police department did, what were their goals for that year, did they meet them, did they not meet them, what were the crime statistics. You know, this should be a pamphlet that your department puts out every year. Available at the department. I wouldn't mail them out to everybody, but I'd have a stack of them up at the front lobby of the department. Your concerned citizens are going to go up there and get them and read this stuff and become informed. And in turn, now you've got them coming into the police department to interact with people. You know, so you guys, if your department doesn't have, get your pens out, please be taking notes on this stuff. If your department doesn't have a yearly report that they give and provide to the citizens, you know, get them to do that. If they tell you, well, we can't do that, BS, drop a BS flag on them. They can do it. You know, that's what we got to get out of, having these entities tell you what they can't do. You're paying them. You're paying taxes. If they can't do it, then your next question should be why. Whereas this, maybe if you take less trips to all these schools that are resorts, you'd be able to do it. You can do it for the community. If you want to educate, if the community comes to the police department for education, the police department should be providing that. And, you know, like I said, I don't talk about my city or my department unless it's relevant to something that we're talking about. But sometimes I do like to use it as an example because my department does produce that every year. And it's out there for people to see. I mean, they don't hide anything. You can find out the manning, what we did last year, how many arrests, how many murders, all your crimes are listed, geographic areas, it's broken down. It's pretty much a catalog. And, you know, I imagine it costs the city a hefty ton of money to do it, but on the flip side of it, what it is, it's an investment in the next area I want to move to under police, and that's transparency. You know, are there some things about police that the citizens aren't going to know in reference to investigation? Obviously, yeah, we're going to have that. But some things, when citizens ask questions, they should get answers to. They shouldn't get the runaround. And, if you know, when you're dealing with officers, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be very limited in the information you get because their hands are tied. You know, I told you guys a couple shows ago, police departments have general orders, operating guidelines, patrol orders. They have these different set of rules that officers have to act under. And it's very strict in there of what they can say, how much they can say, and what they can't say. So the officers on the street, we tend to catch a lot of the brunt of a lot of these things that are local. In reference to local incidents I'm talking about right now in your city. And then the officer will refer you to that sergeant. That sergeant's hands are pretty much tied, too. You're led to a public information officer. And generally, yes, and I'll tell you, that's generally going to be somebody who's going to give you the political spin. Period. You know, if you do that research that we talk about so much, getting in there and not getting in there for the purpose of destroying your department, your purpose is to learn about the department, to strengthen it, and transform it into what you want. See, when you walk in that front door of the police department and you know the makeup, you know the racial breakdown in the department. You know how many officers are on each shift. You know what the police department budget is. You know how much was spent last year and what it was spent on. See, now they can't throw that at you. You're coming in there powerful. You don't need to take folks with titles with you to do it. And you say, well, I can't get a group behind me. Sometimes you get so many people behind you that they get in your way. If it's just you, then let it just be you. And you disseminate the information. You know, we move down under police to number three. You know, community involvement. How involved is your police department in your community? I'm not talking about showing up at the church fish fry or showing up at just the barbecue or just showing up because somebody said, hey, this event is open for all police. Because I got to say, if the police weren't invited, would they have showed up? Sure, some officers would if they have time. And then you got to separate. Good morning, Harvey. You have to separate out, too, how much of it is dog and pony. You know, you're going to get your officials to show up because it looks good to be there. And that's the last time you're going to see them in that neighborhood in a lot of instances. You know, we used to have things, when I was coming up, we had power programs. In many police departments, that program has gone by the wayside. So now we're picking these kids up. We're putting them in the back of patrol cars, and it's costing cities a ton of money. I mean, and citizens. I mean, a ride to juvenile is not free. We're not a cab service. It's expensive. But when we don't have proactive interaction with those kids, if the patrol officers don't have the time, you know, I'll tell y'all something that a lot of you probably didn't know. You know, we don't get a lunch break. And I will say this for where I work. We don't get a lunch break. You eat when you can. If sometimes a bag of Doritos and a Dr. Pepper is dinner. We don't get a lunch break. Now, some departments do have that where you get 15, but a lot of departments, when you see those officers out there, they don't have a time to just say, well, you know, show me out for 30 minutes to have lunch. You don't have that. You just run and call to call to call. So, you know, if we don't even have time to eat, you know they're not giving us time to just get out and just sit down and talk to these kids or just sit in the park, you know, where you can just check out of service and just be available for emergencies, but just be in the park. Talk to some kids, shoot some balls, sit down. That is all gone. And that's why we don't have the ability to solve a lot of cases because we don't have the trust of the community. We don't have that insight. You know, now we have to go into talking about the officers as far as how many officers live in the city. Because inner city people particularly are very astute. They watch officers and they look at visibility. And some people, they only see you in uniform. They've never seen you grocery shopping. They've never seen you at church. They might see you at the barbershop if you run over to get your hair cut. But, You know, you can't be out on the street and you treat people like crap, then you come in the barbershop and, hey, brother, how you doing? It doesn't work that way. Of course, these people aren't going to say anything to you, but when you leave, they will. You know, when we go out there, our job is to solve crimes and prevent crime. If people won't talk to you, then how can you solve crimes? How can you get leads? You know, there's ways that you do things that people understand. I think in inner cities, they understand our job. So the officers, if you don't live in the city, do some things in the city. It may save your life. Going to an event now and then, maybe going to a church service in the church in the area where you work. Don't look at, well, it's a white church and I'm black, or it's a black church and I'm white, or whatever. Just go. You know, it's going to make people wonder, well, who is this guy? And you can say, hey, I'm just the officer. I'm so-and-so that works your area at night. You know, and you can drop the title. You can just say, I'm Stan, and I'm the police officer that works your area at night. And some of those people are going to tell you, hey, well, you know, will you look at this? Will you look at that? What these people are telling you is that the department may have their idea of what the complaints are, but you may think it's drugs. But when you get four or five of these people just at a social outing and say, man, that doggone loud music in the park and you know, the prostitutes, now they're telling you what they see the problems are. That's a perfect opportunity to say, hey, I'll tell you what, I come back to work, you know, tomorrow night. Can I stop by your house and talk to you for a couple minutes? And then stop by and say, what do you think the problems are in your area? What do you want me to spend time on? That person's going to open up and tell you all the things that are the roots of what you need to do two things. First, gain a foothold in that neighborhood. Second, you will start gaining trust that you're not going to get from just randomly searching people, writing a bunch of tickets. You know, that's not going to do it. Because that one person's going to go, man, I met so-and-so. He's okay, man. I told him about this. He came out and got it done. You know, and then when you start going back to them and saying, hey, can you guys help me with this problem over here? I'm having a problem with it. We're talking about the foundation of community policing, but that's how you get it in there. That's how you get it in there. Now let's move down to number three, and then I'm going to get to the callers up here. Number three is the community. You know, the community has to make that effort to reach out. It has to make that effort. And people can say, well, it's not my responsibility. I don't work for the police department. Then you don't, you know, you can have an opinion, but what good is it? The community has to make that effort to learn and understand there are some good officers. Not all officers are bad. No more than all people are bad that we encounter. You know, I don't expect you to come and give sympathy. And, you know, I think sometimes that's a little overboard. We perform a job. We're paid to perform it. Yes, we have difficult moments in it. Yes, it's a hard job. Yes, it's a thankless job. But we make good money. We make a lot more than the guys who dump the trash. We make a lot more than the guys who dig the ditches. We make a lot more money than the people who work in the zoo. So we make good money. And people will pay you according to that job that you do. And I think the community, get in, learn us. Sit down and say, we'll go back to the book. Why don't we have a year-end review book that the police department puts out? You know, how much knowledge do you as a citizen have about your department? What do you know about that department? Do you know all the things we talked about earlier? You know, the racial makeup, the demographic breakdown, how many officers are on each shift? You know, how many outside units do you have? Do you have a crime prevention program? What's the style of policing? Has that chief set a style? And you guys that follow, you know what we're talking about when we talk about the different styles of policing. You know, what is the style of policing that chief puts out, that the entire department? You can't have the street officers doing community policing and have the administrative staff or the detectives doing call-driven or reactive. That's not going to work. Everybody's got to be on one sheet of music. So, chief, what style of policing do you have? Have you gone out and introduced that style to the community? Have you taught, as a chief, have you, not the individual officers, have you, the chief, taught the citizens? What is the difference between reactive policing, call-driven policing, problem-oriented policing, and community policing? Have you done it? You're the captain of the ship. You set the course. Because we've seen, and I go back and I talk about it, chief after chief after chief. Stand up when the town is on fire. Hello, Ferguson. Hello, Baltimore. Y'all know what I'm talking about. They stand up and they preach this community policing philosophy, but they never enact it. You know, let's get down to the access to the police admin. Or do the citizens have access to the police administrators? Can they get in there to the police administrators in a timely fashion where they can tell them their views or their opinions? You know, is that door open to them? Or do they get brushed off? How easy is it for citizens to file complaints? The citizen goes to the front desk of the police department, and they got to go through hell to get a complaint form. Now, not only are they mad at that officer, they're mad at the administration. So how easy is it for the citizens to be able to file a complaint? There's a video that's going around. I'll try to find it and post it on my page. They did a news company did a study in Florida, you know, and they showed that they went around just saying they wanted to file complaints at officers. They got threatened with arrest. A couple of them got manhandled. They went in. Some of the departments didn't even have forms. Some of the police department people threw them out because they wouldn't tell that particular person what they wanted to complain about. So, you know, that's a big thing. The community wants to know it. How easy is it for us to go there and file a complaint? Okay? And how involved is the community in police programs? Like I said, once again, I don't, you know, my city's got its problems like everybody else. And my department's got its problems like everywhere else. But when I talk about it, I have to go by, you know, personal experience. And I can tell you, we got some civilians here. And, I mean, we've got a Citizens on Patrol program. We got a Citizens Police Academy here where you actually fill out an application and you come and sit. And you guys can Google it. And I'm not going to advertise for the city. But you guys can Google it. Y'all know where I work and you can find out about it. But you actually go to a class and you sit in there one day a week, one night a week. Different section of the police department comes and teaches you what that particular section does. And, you know, you get a chance to go out and it's nighttime, of course. It's in the evenings. So, and you go out and you get to do a traffic stop, you know, a scenario. It's not, you're not out there pulling people over. But you get to understand what it's like to get out of that car and walk up to a car where you don't know what's going to happen. You know, and that's really been good because we learn from citizens what they like and don't like. We get to learn from citizens what we need to do to improve, and they get to take away from us how we feel on things. So, you know, that's a good program to get into. I'm gonna get to my first caller that's calling in from the 314 area code. Last four is 4644. What's up?
Well, you know what you're trying to say, and I think you are working in the capacity of police, but. Police are employees, and many municipalities don't look at them like that, especially in the black community. I want to refer to the black communities. Police are merely employees. The people are the bosses, and the politics control the police.
Mm-hmm.
And until we get back, until municipalities get back to that realization, then you're going to have these problems of your police running buck wild and misbehaving when they come in contact with citizens. Not to curtail them for what they need to do, but citizens can form police commissions. I sat on one in a black community one time, and we set policies on what the police would do and would not do. For instance,
mm-hmm.
told them that you do not engage in high-speed chases. Let the person go. Because ultimately, the liability falls back on the people. The people have to pay those liabilities, those claims, those settlements.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say this. In Ferguson, of course, the people didn't come out and vote out the long-standing mayor. The mayor knows. But I see where Leslie Mespadden, Michael Brown's mother, is running for her city council. And if she's successful, then she will be the boss of the police department. And she would have an opportunity to participate in making changes, setting policies on how they operate, and more important, how they are hired. I think that if you are representing a community that's 80% black, then 80% of those employments should look and reflect the community. And funny thing, we have a county supervisor, Mike Stinger, I believe his first name is Mike. He made that reference too. They're making change in the county police, which is over those municipalities I just mentioned. He said that the county police that are serving in those municipalities should reflect the population that they are representing. And I know you're not of this, but the same thing should apply to the fire department, too. Why are all the firefighters in a all-black community all white? Anyway, man, continue on.
You know, I appreciate your call, man. I'll tell you what, you're a godsend, because those commissions empower the community. And it gives people, whether they serve on the commission, but it gives them someone to go to that will carry that cross forward. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, getting that community involvement established and getting that police department you want. You're 100% right. Until the community is empowered and has some strength to have some oversight, you will have some of these incidents that we've seen. We're also, and you said it perfectly, run roughshod over people, go into certain communities that just operate with impunity. And we see it, and that overshadows the good officers that are trying to make the difference. But you're right. We are public servants, period, point blank. We are. But the problem is, you're right. We talked about that last week on the show, Bureaucracy in Blue, and you guys can go back and get that. And we talked about that. The political ties in policing run very deep. You know, so, I appreciate that call. Thank you. We're going to go to the next caller from 804 area code, last 48603. And let me get you in here. What's going on?
Hey, Brother Stan, how you doing? It's Gus calling from the great 804. I agreed
what
with
up,
the how you feeling, man, and much to do to the Drake's Media family. How everybody doing? Hey, look, man, I agree with the caller that was just on. Something's got to give. Either it's the authority that policemen have in a lot of municipalities. We all agree that we have to have oversight. We all agree. We have to have civilian oversight, that it's not a military. You guys are not the Army. I think we have to have civilian oversight. But I'm trying to look deeper and see what is the disconnect. And, it's a personal thing. I think the disconnect is the power that a peace officer has in certain municipalities. And that's where the issue comes in. They get a little bit of power, and then they go, like you said, they're roughshod over the community. And I don't think that's fair. And you're right. There should be residency requirements in the community that you serve. They tried it in D.C. It dropped the crime rate down just a little bit, because I lived in D.C. But they had a lot of officers living in the community in which they serve. One of my friends that's a police officer, he would park his car. They gave him a take-home vehicle, and as long as he parked it in the parking lot where he lived, his rent was free. His rent was free. So you got to give incentives to them guys to want to live there. I mean, of course, they got to have decent housing, but I think that's a start to a long-standing problem.
Sure. You know, Gus, and I got Keith Perkins made a good point here on the Facebook, and I'm going to be reading some of these comments and brought some of these people. He says, we can't help who applies for the job. And, he's exactly right, because I can tell you, when you look at African-American males in particular, and I'm not speaking for everybody, I'm just going to speak for me. I like the job, but in growing up, I didn't like the way it was done. I didn't like the way in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the police interacted with us as young black males. I didn't like it. While I did like the profession and the job, I didn't like the way it was done. So, and I'm not saying everybody needs to be like me. So for me, I had a choice. I could sit back and I can say, screw that, I'm not doing it. Or I can say, how do I get in? And I can't change the world, no. But I can change how I do it, which may get another young brother or Hispanic guy or Asian guy that says, I'm going to do it the way he does it. That's how we got to be infectious. And yes, right now policing has left a bad stain on African-American males wanting to apply into policing, and to a degree Hispanic males, because they see how we are disproportionately treated, not just by policing, but by the criminal justice system. So even when I talk to these young brothers, they'll have respect for what I do because they know me or I talk to them, but they'll tell me, I don't like the police. You're okay with us, but I don't like the police. And I said, what do you not like about the police? We don't like they treat us. Now, treatment is going to be treatment, but let's not talk around it. We all know that white folks get treated by the police different than black folks. And I know some people are going to go, not me, this happened to me. I'm talking about on a broad spectrum. We know that exists. Okay, it's there. So, for the black people who do come into this job, I think by and large, the vast majority want to impact it and affect the difference within how this job is done to the best degree that they can. But a lot of that falls back now. And, you know, the chief has to be the chief of the whole department, but you have to go in and heal the things. We can go back historically and look at the wounds left historically by policing in the black community. You know, let's not forget at the end of those fire hoses in the Civil Rights March were not firemen. At the end of that leash was not a citizen. These are things that have left the stain, and then to some degree, they perpetuate and play themselves out to this day, and it taints a lot of well-meaning people who would be great at this job from coming into it. You know, so yes, we need more African-Americans, we need more Hispanic people into this job, but at the same time, I mean, we need good people, period, right now, because we don't have enough good people in this job that even get to the leadership roles to affect any change. Some of these chiefs running departments, you know, you got to wonder where they got some of these people from. Let me go to this next caller real quick from the 214 area code 5160. What's going on?
How you doing, Stan? It's Rob from the Roundtable.
What's up, Rob?
Definitely shout out to Behind the Blue Curtain. Shout out to Drake's Media Network and all the speakers on the panel today. So I'm still just listening back I've been listening to the conversation just in the background. Like I heard someone said it. That all the fire department and the police department, you know, seem to be mainly of Caucasian or, you know, of European descent, you know, in black communities. Like, that's interesting. Like, I kind of wanted to touch on something with that, because in Dallas, like, I want to know how, like, we know, and I'm going to probably come out of left field for some people for a sec. We know how, for those that watch sports in the NBA, they have a players-only night now on TNT. And so now that was done as a response to the other side of the competition in integrating players, people who were a part of the game, who were a part of the sport, getting them involved in the media now, getting them involved in the business side a little more and seeing kind of how they integrate. Well, I mean – I remember you talked about, Stan, a program for civilians to be able to go to learn about the different parts of the police department. But I think also, just in my opinion, with our conversation, a different dimension we should apply to that is maybe something in reverse. You know, like, and I would like to know, because in my mind, I don't want a police officer that isn't passionate about their job, you know, to the point that they're willing to put their life on the line for someone that doesn't look like them. I don't want someone like that running my area. I don't want somebody like that, you know, representing anybody in my family that live in the area, because they're disingenuous by design, in my opinion. But a test for that, I wonder, is why don't we, like we've talked about it in the past, why don't we create a program where we can't force the police officers in Dallas to get involved in it, but, you know, we want to engage how well you are with your diversity training or your just knowledge on being a part of other cultures. So then if we don't try to, you know, keep offering opportunities for police officers to get involved, create a breakfast program, get involved in a sport, in a basketball league or, you know, a football league with some kids, if you don't find a way to try, but not just for the kids that we know the cops like, but we also need to give everybody the chance and on both sides say, okay, well, you know, let's go to this community where they're not really trusting of police officers that don't, you know, that aren't black or that don't look like them or that they haven't known really for a specific amount of time, but they saw them at their kids, baseball game. You know, they saw this police officer at their kid's football game, you know, at their kid's soccer game, and this person was either a coach or a referee. He was trying to get involved. They at least have a little background on you at that time. You know what I mean? We want to see involved police officers. I don't know if you agree.
But at the same time, Rob, when we have these involved police officers, they can't get cut off by a bunch of bureaucratic BS from the city, because I'll give you an example. We had a thing we used to do here in the 80s, and it was called, the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. It was called the Pig Bowl. And what it was is it was our department against our sheriff's department, a full contact football game for charity. We would get the equipment donated from different high schools. We go to one high school, different high schools every year, and we would play the game at a different field. All the concessions sold at that game, the school got to keep. The ticket sales we split up between our police department and the sheriff's department, and all that money went to charities. We didn't get a dime out of it. We would go out there and play for free. And, I mean, we had Baylor University would come and tape us up. We had real straight-up officials out there officiating the game. And I'm going to tell you, man, it was some hard hitting, but it was fun for us. And it got the chance for the citizens to see us as just people, you know, just having a good time. And it really was – and, of course, yeah, we had injuries, you know, because we were a bunch of old guys. You're going to have sprains and different things. But, you know, that program went away because – they says, well, the health risk, you can get injured, you're out of work, and I can understand that. But that was an excellent program. That was gone. And then, you know, like I said, you don't have a power program. You know, there's a lot of things that I think that, to me, interacting with these kids is just as big a part in a positive way as it is putting them in cars and taking them to juvenile. Positive interaction. You got to have it. And is it going to cost money? Sure, it's going to cost money. But ask Ferguson how much money their cleanup costs. Ask the city of Dallas if they ever get these 1,000 officers that they're short, if they ever get them. Because just going back on what you said, Rob, I wouldn't go up to Dallas and work. But those peanuts that they pay those men and women to go out there and put up with that mess every day. And I'm not dogging the officers. I'm dogging the way the department is run. Dilapidated cars. Equipment is raggedy, and I went up there and rode with Nick. So if you're a Dallas officer and you're saying he don't know what he's talking about, yeah, I know. Remember what I'm talking about, profession, identity, what people come away seeing? I went up there and rode with them for a day. I saw the calls that just held on the screen and held on the screen because there's nobody to answer them. You know, I saw the raggedy building that these guys and these ladies have to work out of. How do you recruit people, black, white, or anything, to go in there and work in that? How do you stay motivated going to work in that building every day? It was like a dungeon. Now, maybe they have other nice buildings I didn't see. They probably do. But once again, what are we talking about today? Going on perception. If I lived in Dallas, my perception of that was, how do I build a better police department? First, get these people a decent building. Get them some decent cars. No wonder you got speeders. The cars didn't even have radars in them. Pay these people a living wage that's commensurate with the cost of living to allow them to, first off, be able to live in the city of Dallas without having to live in Oak Cliff, where they got to walk out the front door and handle calls on the way to work. So, I mean, there's we want to get these officers in the community, but you got to pay people. And, yes, we make good money, but let's face it. You know, we're targets when we walk out onto the street, whether you're a good officer or a bad officer, like or not like. It does, black or white, it doesn't matter. In some places, when you walk out in that uniform, you are a target for some random nut. That's just a fact. So there is an inherent risk that comes with it, but I think that the officers, most of your good officers, do have an understanding of what goes on in their communities. That's why a lot of them are frustrated, because they can't get practical programs from administration. They can't get answers from the administration. They're not allowed to talk to the city council people, and Lord knows you don't ever see the city council people at the problem. So they have to interact with these citizens and for 10 hours a day or 40 hours a week, live in this degradation with them, live amongst the muck and mire, the indifference. And these officers are frustrated, and the good officers, they take that home, and you can't say anything. Your chief doesn't want to hear that. They want to hear the numbers show good. Nobody got killed, so everything's fine. Never mind the kids that can't go out and play. Never mind the whole neighborhoods that are held hostage. Who wants to sit on their porch and look at prostitutes walking up and down the street all day? But there's a silent majority that sees that, and that officer doesn't have the time to even deal with all that because he or she doesn't even have time to eat outside of a bag of Doritos and a Dr. Pepper. Now, that's straight talk. The officer can't interact with that community because if he or she gets too close to the community and gets community support, you get police administrators, you get officers in the department that get nervous. I can tell you from experience. The community will, however, I'll tell you to you officers that are listening, that community will insulate you when the department runs from you. When they bring you across and they tell you, you know what, when you face that moment and you're in the Garden of Gethsemane, when you're at your moment, when you got to now tote your cross to your crucifixion spot, guess what? That community will go with you. They will support you. But you have to be there to support them. and bring these things. Sure, the police department may not change what you want done, but I can go back to the citizen and say, well, I sent a memo to the assistant chief or the chief or my sergeant, whatever, talking about what you guys wanted. As soon as they get back to me, I'll let you know. And if they don't get back to me for 6 weeks, I'm not going to lie to that citizen. I'll go, yeah, it's been 6 weeks. I ain't heard nothing from them. And when the citizen says, well, maybe they don't care, what can I say? But yeah, I guess so, maybe. You might want to go up there and talk to them. Citizens, you got more pull than I do. They can tell me, shut up, get in your car, and go out on the street. They can't say that to you. That's the empowerment of it. But that takes the officers being open with the citizens and working with the citizens. The citizens learning to know the officers, learning that all of us aren't bad. You know, there's some good officers out there. You know, I want to give a shout-out to, got my ace in the bullpen, Mr. Tyrone K. Dunmore. Ty, you want to add anything in here real quick?
I'm just sitting back listening. I mean, you know, I look at when you talk about what kind of police department you were having or what do we expect or what are we looking for, I think that's one of the big problems. We really don't know what we want. And like you said earlier, without the ability to be proactive and do our homework and do research, we're basically have become great at constantly and consistently complaining and instead of working toward a more realistic goals within our community. And it starts with us. I think we don't get what we expect simply because we won't do what's necessary to inspect. We got to find out what's really going on, as you said, and if the people don't step up to the plate, then you'll never be able to get a bunt, let alone a home run. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of unrealistic expectations because, unfortunately, we have a lot more realistic procrastinations in our community. And we got to start taking some of this, let's say, responsibility. I want to call it blame because we're good at balking and blasting and blaming each other and airing out our differences instead of, which is a damn shame, actually, because we got to work together. And the citizens should be an extension of the crime-fighting element in their community, because if we have a whole lot of crime, we know who's pretty much doing what. And, of course, we know about the rules of the streets and ditches, what they call it, snitches get stitches and all that. But, unfortunately, as this ride your show is called, Behind the Blue Curtain, there's a blue coat of silence as well. So until people really start speaking up and against what's wrong and know, you know, they're going to be treated right and handled right instead of being, like in many cases, how you are looked at in disdain and probably in many areas in the policing because you talk about the things that put bad name on your profession, that will continue on. I mean, because cops or police officers or peace officers, they're constantly responding to calls. And those calls are predicated by the things that people are doing in those communities. You know, they didn't have to come to, you know, they know they're up against crime out in areas. So at any point you could respond to a domestic, which of course we know is the worst, a shooting, a car accident. It could be a robbery. It could be a host of things. But I mean, the peace officers are only responding to the calls. And unfortunately, too many people in the community are just committing or let's say responding to the falls. You know, we want to always talk about what's wrong. Like I said, the community, people who live in that community should have a vested interest in that community instead of expecting people who particularly maybe don't live in that community to care so much about them. So the people in their communities care more about their communities. And I know you talk about the police officers that are head and shoulders, officer head and shoulders. But again, if people don't show enough that they care by getting involved, that's only how we're going to get resolved. If not, things will continually to dissolve. And we need more humanitarians than these authoritarians, they call them, people who get power and they get goes to their head. Because power, it could do well, and power could also destroy. It has a flip switch reaction to that, and it's all how we respond and react to it. And just to talk on real quickly about what they talk about the fire department, where I heard a gentleman call in. Come on, these institutions, these jobs were not set up for, as they want to still call us, minorities. They were predicated on hiring civil servant workers, people who are employed for the community, but what nationality or what ethnic groups we're talking about. It's very simple. The Italian, the Scottish, and the Irish. And there had to be a lot of lawsuits. If you do some research, you'll find there had to be a lot of lawsuits be filed so they can have these tests so they can start hiring what they consider more of minorities, and we don't have enough in them. So we're just starting to make a dent in this. You know, you go back a while, there were none on certain departments.
Right.
Go back and see. It ain't been that long. So it was never set up for, let's say, this multicultural, multi-diversity / sensitive, they want to say sensitive training job. No. It was set up for three in particular groups. And that's why when things happen, unfortunately, when it's deaths, killings, I'm talking about when officers get killed or die in a line of duty, or even just while they were still on the job, they pass away. This is why the bagpipes come out. This is why you were talking about Scott. You look at the rights that are dealing with when someone makes the ultimate sacrifice. There's nothing Latino or Afrocentric about that. That is purely Irish and Italian and Scottish. And that comes from the secret societies. We know about the Masons, the Masonic, the orders and things. So there's an offshoot of those things. And just to finish up, I'm going to say, all this stuff, the crime that goes on, we've heard it over and over again. We are our own worst enemy. What is it about people that causes them to be criminals? Well, why do people rob and steal and all this other stuff? Well, one thing, the counterattack to poverty is work. So we got to get people to work. We got to get people into some type of training to get skills, but they got to want it too. So that's why I said we can set up all the programs we want, but until people take a real initiative to want to better their lives, their communities will continue to stay ravaged with crime and stuff. And that ain't on the police. That ain't on the profession of the police. Unfortunately, the police officers have to come in and deal with that. What we need to deal with is the fact that why are we allowing conditions like that to continue to keep, you know, fostering or growing and eradicating our own neighborhoods where we're supposed to live, where we're supposed to have a vested interest in where we live. So whether we're selling drugs or, you know what I mean, it's like there is emotional problems here, there's mental health, there's low self-esteem, there's low self-values, low self-worth, there's hopelessness, and so we got to counter that with some kind of hope. And when people get to the point where they don't even care no more, when you start setting up police officers in the sense of fake 911 calls and shooting your own people because they're our own people, they are human beings who took a vow, oath to protect and serve. What are we going to anarchy next? That's not the way. So we got to get rid of this hopelessness. We got to wean this hopelessness out and bring back some sense of humanitarian effort, morals, and values and standards. All of us. Now, we can't expect just one side to do it if the people in the community won't do it, because that perception will continue to play out and will be constantly conceived that, people of a certain ethnic group are criminals. There are this, are that. And we know that's not true. But when largely look at these cities, because there's trailers, as they want to say, trailer parks with a whole lot of drugs and meth. But we're talking about the narrative that pretty much has played out. People who are being targeted, they're only targeted because we're doing a lot of their own targeting ourselves. We're doing it to each other. So I just want to say that. This is a relationship. It takes 100-100. Ain't no 50-50. We can't expect law enforcement to come 100%, but the community wants to sit and lay on and you know, sit on their behind and be lazy and not do all they can do to make their community better as well by getting involved, period. We're taught, but get involved and making a difference for a better change for our community. That's not just on police. That's on everybody. The citizens should be an extension of law enforcement, an extension of a peace officer. And we should work together cohesively as a unit to make our communities better. That's the only how it's going to work. As long as it's them against us, you know, No, we are
one. No, we can't have that us against them mentality. That's not going to make it. You're right. You're right. You know, I have one guy on here, Eric Schaefer. He's on my Facebook. He says, you know, it's not up to the people to enforce laws. It's up to the officers to enforce the laws under the elected official who is the sheriff, which I agree with that. But then I also say it's up to the sheriff to make sure that he or she is taking into consideration everybody, not just the voters. I think his comment was that the sheriff, you know, they enforce the laws and work for the sheriff who was voted in. Well, you know, you got some people didn't vote for that sheriff, and you got some people who didn't vote at all. And I think as far as with a lot of sheriffs, that's one of the problems that goes on with them is they come out and give their political brand of law enforcement, and they're not serving the whole demographic of the community because the sheriff is elected where police chiefs are chosen. So, I mean, I agree with his comment, but I'm just saying I don't think that the fact that the sheriff is elected has anything to do with how he or she puts out the law. I mean, you're there to protect everybody. A whole lot of these sheriffs didn't even come to the low-income areas to even, you know, solicit votes. So just to throw that
out
there.
Can I just say this real quick, Stan?
Sure.
Yeah, but and when you talk about law, see, I always look at the bigger scale, and I'm talking about universal law, global war. I mean law, excuse me, law. When I mean law, what's lawful? And I tell you one thing I did recently, and then I'm going to be quiet. I saw a New York State trooper. They call them state troopers up here. I don't know, highway patrol in other areas, and it was a European. He was a little younger, of course, and he opened the door for me as we were coming in to get something to eat. And then I went to use the bathroom, and he goes over to an area where I said, shoot, I'm going to go over there and get me a slice of pizza too. So while we're there, I can feel the, like, I'm not going to say it was uncertainty. Like, and of course, he's a younger officer. We're in Queens, New York, and, you know, with all stuff going on and with happening with police and citizens and all that. But I'm finally dressed. I'm well-dressed. What could I do? And it just touched my heart. I said, what can I do to make this guy feel a little more easier? Because even though I was dressed, I still can feel it. So I said to him, I said, officer, I said, God bless you. God protect you. God knows that you're going to need it, especially in this day and time. I commend you for doing the type of work you do in this day and time. Mm-hmm. So I pray that God protects you. You know what I mean? Be safe. And the officer looked at me like, wow. He said, man, thank you. Just to say, to tell another officer you care about his life. How many people will do that? They care about you. Be safe, officer. I pray that you be protected.
I can't.
Little things like that can change.
We get that a lot. We get it a lot down here.
Not up here in the Northeast, I can tell you that. Not in the New York tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. But that's it. But that's a little thing I was saying that I said I could do. So maybe next time he pulls over an African-American, he'll think differently as opposed to thinking that we're all against them or looking at him some kind of crazy way, like, I can't trust you. And I did it. And it just touched my heart. It touched his. And it did. And it wasn't fake. It wasn't an act.
Yeah, I know coming from you it wasn't, but we're down at that 5-minute mark, so we're going to hit the last go-around, and I'm going to start with the brother that called out of the 314 area code, 4644. 30 seconds, brother. Anything you want to talk about?
Well, put things back in a proper perspective. Business control politics, politics control the police, and people should be at the helm of all of that. And take control of your community, not only the police department, also the fire department. And when I say local hiring, I'm talking about the economy needs to stay with those people who's paying for these activities. Anyway, good show.
Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for calling in. All right, we're going to go down to the 804 area code for Gus. 30 seconds, Gus. Anything you want to talk about, brother?
Oh, yeah, my brother. And that was well put by brother TKD. Always enjoy you, brother. I do think, Dan, it should be mandatory, because you had mentioned something earlier about money being spent by the municipalities for the police department, you know, i.e. their raggedy cars and, you know, not proper equipment. It should be mandatory that the police departments in whatever jurisdiction, it should be mandatory that they get paid, meaning that they should always be funded for stuff that they need. That should even, they shouldn't even waver off that. They should do. And number two, I'm getting kind of tired of hearing a lot of every time an incident happened with police officers, well, they need diversity training. No, you don't need diversity training. You know what's right and wrong. You don't need diversity. You're going to have diversity, but you need to know what's right and wrong and how to react to what's right and wrong, you know, as a police officer. You know what's wrong. You know what you're doing is right, and, you know, and therein. But I want to say, what a great show, man. I enjoy it every weekend, and I love calling in and talking and being part of it. And thanks to all the brothers that called in.
Yeah, man, I enjoy having you call in, man. I appreciate you. Thank you. We're going to go to Rob. What's going on, Rob? 30 seconds. Anything you want to talk about?
Just a shout-out to Behind the Blue Curtain again. Shout-out to the speakers and Drake's Media Network. I would just close out with just saying that We need to also pay attention to these low income communities and how we can activate them economically and independent just of, you know, whatever the situation is that's making them poor. And then that will probably give us some leverage in approaching the police department when we can bring our own money to the table.
Well, I appreciate you, brother. Thanks for dropping that in there. TKD, got a minute, brother. We're about to get out. Final thoughts?
Just don't quit, people. Don't quit. Because once we quit, that's it. That's
all
my
right.
Final thought.
Once again, I want to say I appreciate everybody who listened and chimed in on Facebook. You know, you guys, I'm trying to expand this and trying to give it a little better feel and look and, you know, with video presentations to kind of take it next level to keep our message going. So you guys keep giving me input. Keep letting me know how you feel. Shoot me a message. If I can help you guys in any way, you know, we'll do a show on it. Like I said, if you give me a topic, you're going to be hosting with me. So, you know, we're going to get it done. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. You guys have a safe week. I'm going to get started on next week's show and see you guys next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.